All right, welcome to Triple Your Trading Profits, and we're actually into the second call. I've got Stuart McPhee on the line. You there, Stuart?
I am, Dave.
Thanks for joining us. I'm looking forward to today. What actually happened, it was the end of last week, just before the weekend, I sent out an email to all of the subscribers saying, you know, if you had the opportunity to ask Stuart or myself any trading question, what would that question be? And we got so many responses. I'm not too sure that we'll be able to get through all of them today, but I wanted to actually do something a little bit unique. I know a lot of times, you know, people shy away from the hard questions, so we're going to do something completely different. I want to actually almost go straight for the hard questions. So I've gone through and just taken just actually the first 10 questions that did come through, and I'm going to read them word for word as they've come through, and we're going to get Stuart and my thoughts on many of the trading problems that you guys are having. And this really is just, I suppose, a start just to whet your appetite. We've got we're planning on working through a lot more of these questions over the course of the next couple of weeks. So I suppose without further ado, if we jump into the first question and then we'll get Stuart's thoughts. So I've got the first email I've got here. It says, I'm primarily a trend trader, and the dilemma seems to be giving your trade enough room to move without triggering a stop on a pullback in a trend. It seems always a compromise between setting a tight stop and getting stopped out too early, or having a wider stop but giving away too much profit. I would prefer volatility-based stops using an ATR multiple. Any thoughts? Or do we just have to accept these outcomes as part of your trading plan? Regards, Peter. So, Stuart, what are your thoughts on that first question?
Peter has come across a very common problem that a lot of traders have from a, forget the psychology and all that business, from a very technical perspective and a hands-on practical application when it comes to trading. He's got to the root of a very common problem, and that is finding the balance when we're actually in a profitable trade, finding that balance between, you know, not taking it too soon, but also giving it that opportunity to keep on going and develop into a good profitable trade. It is a very common problem. Even after I had sorted out personally my problem with cutting losses, and I got over that, and I got to the point where cutting losses wasn't an issue for me, and I did it without hesitation, this still was an issue for me after that. So it's a real common problem. Now, he's actually hit the nail right on the head. What are we trying to do? Do we try to have our stops tighter so we don't lose so much, or do we give the stock more room to move, and but therefore we give perhaps potentially back more profit? I said the word right in my first sentence. It's really finding the balance, the right balance between that. Now, the compromise, I guess, is if you give a stock more room to move, the compromise for me is you're giving that stock more opportunity to continue in its long-term or medium-term uptrend. You're giving it more opportunity. And if it does come back and hit your stop, it has really convinced you that it's no longer going to continue to go up, and you've made the right decision to exit. The common problem is people do have their stops too tight, and they do get, you know, triggered on those pullbacks, not allowing it room to move, and they do not enjoy those medium-term trends. So I think the real compromise is you give it more room, you're giving it more opportunity to keep on going higher, and in certainly the equity markets we're enjoying right now, more often than not, that is proving to be profitable for you.
Yeah, to add to that as well, I think a really big part of this is picking, like you said, you touched on it, that idea of picking the time frame that you're trading, because it's really that it depends on what trend you're looking to catch. If you're looking to catch that longer term trend, obviously you're going to set that wider stop, or if you're trading a shorter term system, you're going to set a tighter stop. So I think when going through the system design process, and there is a process, and once you go through that process, one of the first things that you need to do is identify, okay, well, what time frames am I looking at trading? What trends am I looking at capturing? And that really is going to determine how wide or tight you set your stops. I'm curious to get your thoughts, Stuart, as well. He mentions he prefers volatility-based stops, like the ATR multiple. What are your thoughts on the ATR?
Yes, I love it. I use ATR myself for my medium-term stock trading, have done so for many years. The benefit of using an ATR, as Peter alluded to, was it's a volatility base. So what you're doing is you're taking the volatility of that individual stock you're trading and you are tailoring an exit. You are developing an exit based on the volatility of that stock. If stock A doesn't move very, very far at all, like so its volatility is quite low, you can afford to have a closer stop. If stock B is quite volatile, highly volatile, then the volatility base method, the ATR, will push that exit a little bit further away, so you are able to tailor your exit to what that stock normally does. He talks about pullback. The worst thing you want to do is get into a solid medium-term uptrend. It's been going now for a good couple of months. It may only just be the beginning of several years of just consistently moving higher. The last thing you want to do is next week, and it pulls back 3 days, is get out.
Yeah, agree.
That's the whole, you know, that's the whole problem of setting your stops too tight. This could end up being a trade that lasts 3 years, let alone, you know, next week you're out because it came back a few days. Those few days might just amount to, you know, let's say 1.5% every day, maybe 2%, anywhere between 5% and 6%. In a medium-term uptrend, 5% or 6% is not a huge distance for a stock to travel, and it's going to do that often. We want to keep away from that, to, as I said, you know, to give it every opportunity to keep on going higher. So back to your question, ATR, I think it's a very, very, very useful method. I use it myself, and I can't speak highly of it.
I suppose, again, this is me wanting to ask the hard questions. Everybody always looks for, you know, okay, they're like, okay, well, we've talked about the ATR, so what multiple of that ATR? Now, I know there is no one perfect answer, but if we were to set almost like a band for people to work between, like, you know, between a few multiples, what multiples, let's say, again, really it does depend on the time frame that you're trading, and I think the ATR method really does lend itself better to a medium to longer term trading system rather than a shorter term system.
Sure.
So with that in mind, what sort of band might you look for, you know, an ATR multiple?
Sure, no, great question. Look, I remember when I first heard about ATR, I was at a full day course, and this person introduced ATR to me, and he mentioned 2 ATR. Now, what that means is we take the average true range of that stock, we multiply by 2, we'll end up with a distance, you know, 15 cents or 20 cents, and that is the distance from our entry down to our initial stop loss or our exit system that we use, whether it be a trailing or initial stop. But what I found out after that is it sounded all good and it uses volatility, so the higher the volatility, the further away you stop. I found out that 2 ATR really put me smack bang in the middle of the medium-term uptrend, and it came back to the problem I was just talking about earlier, where if it came down 3 or 4 days, your 2 ATR stop was always going to be triggered. So that was my first experience with ATR, and I quickly realised that wasn't a very good way of doing it. So to answer your question with a band, I think you could probably use anywhere between 3 to 5, something like that. You know, so we take, let's pick 4. So we take the average true range, the ATR, multiplied by 4, and that's the distance we use for our exiting. Now, again, it comes back to the problem, you know, why would you use 5 if you can use 3? Well, 5 just gives you that extra space. It gives you, you know, the more room to move, it gives the stock more opportunity to keep on going higher. So again, even if we pick 3 to 5, you've still got to find a balance somewhere in between there.
Yeah, and I think this comes back to what I was saying as far as system design, and there's a process, and a process that can be taught and learnt. Part of what band that you, or what particular number that you go for does depend on other variables in your system. So that's why there is no one perfect thing, because also everybody's different. We all know that, you know, we've got different levels of risk and what we're comfortable with and not. So when you go through that system design process, you'll pick the multiple that makes sense with the rest of your system and makes sense with you. You can do appropriate back testing or even test it in the actual field, and then you'll get a feel. I suppose for me, the ATR, it's a commonly used exit, and for me personally, I have used the ATR. I actually like what's known as almost like the lowest low stop, which is where you talk about, well, what is the lowest low in the last X period, where X obviously really does depend on what time frame you're trading. I like that one because it actually consults price data. It does lend itself maybe to a slightly more shorter term system because you're looking at almost, for me, it feels like it's finding support and resistance. But I think the reason I bring that up and talking about another method is, okay, Stuart likes ATR, I like the lowest low. There is no right or wrong. There's, you need to find that one that works for your system and then do the appropriate testing and see where it fits in. You know, different horses for different courses, I suppose.
Absolutely, you're right. There is no right or wrong answer. Just if I may talk about the ATR, let's say we do select A5 multiplied by the ATR, perfectly valid, good stop, but then it comes back to the discipline of being able to stick to that. So let's say we're in a stock, it's moved up, we're in profit, it's starting to move back, and it's moving back day after day after day, not by much, but little bits every day, and here we are sitting with our 5 ATR stop. Now, the stock maybe clearly not going to continue higher. Just from what we see, it's been going down 8 days in a row now. The market generally is doing something bad. Yet our 5 ATR stop still hasn't been triggered. Now, it can be very easy for us to jump the gun and say, look, why wait for it to come all the way back down to my 5 ATR stop? I don't think it's going to continue higher. Let's just take it now. But then it comes back to the problem, but it may in fact turn around and keep on going higher. It's the discipline to allow it to, you know, come back to your stop without second guessing it or jumping the gun.
And I think that's what I admire most about your trading and that background that you have, which I touched upon in our first Triple U Trading Profits audio, is your history when it comes to everything that you've learned through the army. And that discipline, it just shines through, and I think that's why you have such tremendous success with your trading. So hopefully, I'm hoping over the course of the next series of audios I can ask the right questions to almost find out the methods and techniques that you use to ensure that you have that discipline. So
sure.
Onto the next question I've got here, it does echo the first one. I did notice when I read through some of these questions, it's funny to see a lot of people with similar issues. It's almost like, you know, a lot of people have these things, and I'm hoping by covering it today we'll be able to get people to move forward. The next question comes through. It says, when do I exit a trade? It seems fairly easy to get into a trade and find stocks that rise, but when should I get out before seeing my profits vanish? So we did cover that in a little bit of detail.
We did, indeed.
Yeah, is there anything you wanted to add to that? Or?
Sure. I guess the important thing is this person has recognised the importance of having an exit. That's probably the first problem that people need to get over, is not how we find the exit point and everything, but just, look, I need to have a method here of getting out. A, if the trade doesn't work out for me and I start to lose money, and B, if the trade does work out for me, I don't want to give all the profit back. I need to have some method of having an exit there to lock in profits. So I guess the important thing is we've identified the need to have an exit. Now we need to fine-tune it, and that is determine how we go about setting that exit. Now, you and I just mentioned two different ways of doing that previously, your lowest low and my ATR. There's really so many different ways of setting an exit. Yeah. But I guess the best way to answer this question is you need to identify two types of exit. The first one is the initial stop loss. So we get into the trade. At what point are we going to exit the trade, realizing that trade is not working out for us? So there's a number of different ways we can set that point. We can use a percentage fall. We can use even your lowest low you just mentioned, some technical level, even an ATR-based level, some point below our entry where we're accepting the fact that, you know what, this trade is just not going to work out for us. We need to get out of it and move on to the next trade. So there's a number of different ways we can set that. And, of course, the next step is that if this trade does work out for us, at what point does our initial stop loss no longer become our exit? At what point does all of a sudden a new system of trailing underneath the price come in and start becoming our exit? And again, you know, we can use a number of different things for that. We can use, you know, percentage retracement or the ATR we mentioned before, your lowest low, and all those sorts of things. So there's a lot of different ways we can do it. I guess the important thing, as I said, is realizing we do need a way of setting exits. The way, the manner we select is really fine-tuning, and as you mentioned before, and it's so true, there is no right or wrong answer. There really isn't.
Yeah, just having one, I suppose. So, we covered that one in detail, so having a look at the next one. The next one actually comes through as a two-part question, so perhaps I'll go with the first one first. Here, question one, isn't everything we need to know shown in a chart? Price, bar, volume, trends, patterns... and aren't all other indicators just gimmicks? What are your thoughts on that?
That's a good question. You would have a lot of people, just to the first part, what do you say, isn't everything we need to know in the chart?
Mm.
You would have a lot of people who would agree with that statement, that the chart tells you everything you need to know. And it really draws back to the age-old debate between the benefits and value and merits of technical analysis, analysing, you know, the chart, the price, the data, and fundamental analysis, and that is analysing the economic makeup of that stock or index or currency or whatever. So really this person is getting towards, look, isn't technical analysis all we need to know? Don't we really just need to look at the chart? I think the greatest advantage or benefit of technical analysis is it is the price that ultimately directly influences whether you make money or not.
Yeah.
It's not what you think about the stock because of some fundamental data. It's not because of the profit they've just recorded or the dividend they're about to pay out next week. They may indirectly influence the price, but even then it's difficult to measure the influence that some of those things have on price. But studying the price, the technical analysis, you are studying the very, very thing and the only thing that ultimately influences whether you make money or not. So there is a lot of argument to suggest that, look, forget about all the fundamentals. Whatever people assess the fundamentals to be, they will react accordingly and they will buy and or sell or do nothing. All of those actions, therefore, have an influence on what the price does. Mm-hmm. So let's study the final part rather than all the lead-up parts that will influence the price. That's the real benefit. I tend to move towards that sort of camp. I don't think fundamentals are a waste of time. A lot of people will suggest that. I don't think that's necessarily the case. I think there's a lot of merit in studying the fundamentals of a company, but on the other side, I wouldn't just buy something based on the fundamentals without looking at the price.
Agreed.
Because the price is the ultimate. That's the, as I said, the thing that will determine whether you're going to make money or not. Is everything you need to know in the chart? You could put forward an argument for that. I'm not suggesting that 100%, but it's a pretty strong argument.
Yeah.
The question about indicators, of course, you know, the technical indicators, the hundreds that are available, all they're really doing is taking that raw data, the open, high, low, close, and volume, and performing calculations and producing a different line or combinations of lines or X's and zeros and the like. Are they gimmicks? Yeah, I think there's probably quite a few that are. Are there some, you know, I think there's, however, quite a number of useful indicators. I've openly declared on many an occasion that I don't use any indicators myself because, again, I think all they're really doing is manipulating the price. And after having looked at so many charts over the years, you can almost look at just the price chart and almost draw what the MACD is going to be doing, what the RSI is going to be doing, what the stochastic's going to be doing, and all the others, because you've seen so many charts, and often those indicators just follow the chart anyway. Some useful indicators, but sorry, go on.
Oh, I'd love to add a point on there. I think you touched on something really important, or we've all heard of different things like, you know, intuitive traders and, you know, people who don't necessarily, it almost looks like they don't have a system, and I think Stuart's just articulated that having looked at so many charts, it's almost like he's internalized his system. So he's trading a system, and what might appear to someone looking out on the outside, oh, he's just an intuitive trader. There's so much hard work that's gone in prior to that, in the lead up to that, that's got him to this point. So it's that whole idea that, I suppose, because a lot of people wonder, okay, as successful traders, are they born? Because they'll see these traders who just appear to be intuitive at trading. And I think, really, when it comes down to it, you need to really know your system inside out and internalize it. And I think you just demonstrated it just there that, okay, even though it may appear you're intuitive, then really you've put quite a lot of hard work to get where you're at with that.
Yeah, that's a fair comment, that there's probably a lot of work that's gone into that that people don't see. Yeah, that's a fair comment.
Also, in regards to that as well, we talked about the difference between your technical analysis and your fundamental briefly. I wanted to just add a small point to that. I suppose I'm a little bit biased in that I would consider myself a technical trader, but all you have to do is, just to not discount fundamentals, is look at someone like Warren Buffett, who have, you know, used his entire lifetime, and he's quite possibly one of the most successful investors of all time, at least documented, and I think he's using fundamentals. So I can't, from a logical point of view, discount fundamentals. It does work for some people, but for me, I'm just like the person asking the question, kind of almost inferred, you know, isn't everything shown in the price action? Well, I believe it is, but that doesn't mean you can't make money using
And let me just give you an example of an indicator. The Bollinger Bands are very, you know, commonly used indicator. They measure the volatility and put the bands either side of the price. People trading very short-term systems, perhaps using some products, leverage products like options or something, the Bollinger Bands can provide a very simple entry trigger for trading such a short-term system, because we wait for the price to pierce either the upper or the lower band, reverse and come back through into the band. So something as simple as that, there's nothing complicated about it, but what it does is just makes it perhaps that little bit simpler to identify an entry signal for that person's short-term trading system. Are they gimmicks? No, they can be useful. I don't find them that useful myself, and I don't use any, but I think for some people there is some benefit. And look, at the end of the day, we've said it before, there's no right or wrong answer. If you can find something that works for you, then who are we to suggest that you don't use it? If it works for you and you're comfortable using it, that is fantastic, because that's what we're trying to achieve. So if it works for you, go for it and use it.
Yeah. I suppose that's perfect leading into the next part of this part two of the question. It's got here, do you know of a way that will help me pull the trigger, get into a, in brackets, i.e. get into a stock, instead of looking for confirmation, and then confirmation of the confirmation, etc., until it's too late to get in? What do you think of that?
Commonly referred to as pulling the trigger, having that hesitation in just, you know, initiating the trade in the first place. I think the most common problem that people have with initiating the trade in the first place, having that hesitation, is the fear that the trade won't work out for them. It's the fear that they're going to lose money. And the second part about the confirmation, then, what do you say, confirmation of the confirmation and this and so forth, it can be subconsciously looking for that perfect setup where all the stars are aligned and everything is working in our favour, and I don't think we find that situation very often.
Yeah.
So let me go back to the first point, though, that fear of losing money. I think that can be a large factor on people initiating the trade in the first place. But I think the way to overcome that is realise that, look, anything can happen. When we initiate this trade, it may lose money. Yes, that is a possibility. But remember, the reason why we're trading in the first place is to make money. And by initiating that trade, and only by initiating that trade, are we putting ourselves in a position to make that money. So if we cannot overcome this first step, then our ultimate aim of, you know, realizing the gains and the goods and making money is never going to happen. I think the sooner we face the reality that this trade may be a losing trade, and just get on with it, the better off we'll be. One of the things that can help you in that process of getting over that hesitation is having a stop loss set. Mm. And we just spoke about stops. If I know that I have a stop loss set 10% away, as an example, away from my entry price, I know that I'm already set up, ready to go, that if this trade doesn't work out, I'm going to get out. So it's all at most that protection. It's, I know the worst case scenario out of this possible trade. That perhaps should provide you that little bit more confidence that, look, that's the worst that's going to happen. I'm going to lose 10% of the money I put into this trade. That's it. I'm already set up, ready for that outcome. If that's protected, then perhaps that might provide us a little bit more confidence just to get into the trade in the first place, bearing in mind no one knows what's going to happen. So this might be the trade of your lifetime. This might be the trade that you're still in 18 months' time, looking back and going, imagine if I had never got into this trade. This trade has just made me all this money, and I'm so glad I got into it.
Yeah. Mm. I think another way to increase that confidence, again, it's part of the system design process. I keep coming back to this process because it's almost like there is this process that you go through, but most people just don't go through it. Part of that really should be at least some form of back testing, and by doing some back testing, you gain that confidence and it gives you the ability to make it much easier to pull the trigger. And then,
of course, yeah.
Reading this question, or the two-part question, looking at them together makes me feel like the person who's reading this, it's almost like they're going through the search for the Holy Grail, because it's talking about, you know, indicators, are they gimmicks, and then talking about confirmation of the confirmation. It's almost like they've been coming to this, going through the journey of looking for that perfect indicator, and they're getting frustrated just going, you know, are all of these just gimmicks? Because it's almost like they've been looking for loads and loads of different indicators and maybe even testing them. And then when upon looking for confirmation and confirmation of the confirmation, you can... I suppose one thing to get straight up front is obviously there is no Holy Grail. We all know that, and we've heard it a million times. Whether or not, you know, we believe it or not, it's a whole other story. But I'm here to tell you, look, there is no Holy Grail indicator. But another thing to bear in mind as well is you don't want to... I know Stuart really has shown me this, the importance of having... the simplicity in your system. Like, simplicity is so important. You don't want to overcomplicate things by having indicators on indicators and indicators and indicators, and then you find yourself in the situation of this person asking the question, saying they're looking for confirmation, then confirmation of the confirmation. You know, what are we waiting for? Like you said, the stars to align? Look, you know, that might happen once in a blue moon, but you really do need to make sure that you have... You look at certain characteristics, and I know as part of the Triple Your Trading Profits seminar, we're going to be going through and looking at each one of those different areas that you need to look at. And as long as you have your bases covered in those particular areas, you'll be fine. You don't need six different volume-based indicators. You don't need six different trend-based indicators. You really just need to find one and make sure you have your bases covered in each one of those areas.
Yeah, exactly. And I say it often that, you know, we having a trading plan is important, but just as important is following that plan. And the more complicated you make a trading plan, the less likely you are to follow it. You're just giving yourself more excuses not to follow the plan. It was Albert Einstein who said, everything should be made as simple as possible, but not one bit simpler. Mm. You know, just keep things simple.
Perfect. I've just jumped ahead reading what the next question is, and I think people are going to love this one, because this is I hear this so many times. And so without further ado, I suppose, what exactly does reasonable profit targets mean? If it's reasonable to target to have a target of 5 to 10% per month in stocks, then is it not reasonable for a 50 to 100% return in highly leveraged markets like options and Forex? And that's come from Akashay.
Yeah, I guess what he's saying by reasonable profit targets, he means like gains, like profits during the month. Is that what he's trading those sorts of instruments?
Not 100% sure. I'm thinking he does. It could either be that, or maybe talking about profit targets for individual trades, maybe setting of profit targets. But I think, because you're right, he links it back in the second part, talking about returns. So maybe...
Okay, returns, yeah. 5 to 10% in stocks is pretty good going per month, I should say. 5 to 10% per month. Let's say you get the 10% per month without even using compounding interest. That's, you know, over 100% for the year. Just trading stocks alone. That is
very
outstanding,
yeah.
Going just trading stocks alone. So I think those figures are probably a little bit inflated over what should be a reasonable target to go for in returns. And you and I have spoken before about people asking, you know, what's a good return and how much do you make and all those sorts of things. And I've often said that just trading stocks alone, there's so many different types of stocks.
Yeah.
So you have your chip, you know, in the US you have the top, you know, the 30 that make up the Dow Jones. You then have the next group of huge, you know, high market cap sort of companies. In Australia we have the same. The top 20 companies in our market are huge companies. Well, they have a certain profile with risk and the way they move, which is completely different to, say, a lot of other companies. They're a lot more stable. They don't move that much. They trend well. But when they trend, they're slow and steady, not sharp and quick and high risk. So it really depends on what type of stocks you trade. And there's a lot of more speculative companies that move 5% in a day, and they do it on a regular basis. But of course, we need to catch the right direction of that 5% a day. I think 5 to 10% trading stocks, for the majority of people trading the majority of type of, you know, big, medium cap sort of stocks, is a little bit unachievable. It's probably setting the bar a little bit too high.
Mm.
But so yeah, I don't know where he got those figures from, but that's probably a little bit unachievable.
Yeah, I tend to agree as well. When you think about it, like Stuart said, okay, well, what you're looking at, over 100% return in a year, and then you do the compounding effect. Once you start to talk those numbers, you're talking, you know, pretty massive numbers. And I've seen trading systems, especially when I used to do a lot of back testing, I did see trading systems that performed that well. But what you've got to understand is there's this whole risk to reward ratio, and clearly the higher risk that you get take on board, the greater chance of getting a higher return. So for someone looking at a system, let's say we did look at a system that was returning between 5 and 10% per month consistently, I think I shouldn't have said the word consistently, because we need to almost drop that out of our vocab, because what you've got to understand is you can't, to pull that sort of profit out of the market, there is going to be a certain level of risk. And I bet you, by doing the analysis of a type of system that returns that, you would see that the drawdown would be more than 100% of its capital over a, you know, set trading time. So what I'm trying to say is, you might look at this system that's returning that sort of money, and you would be trading, you know, stocks at the low end, very speculative things. I bet you there would be times where your trading capital would dip, the drawdown would dip below 100%, effectively losing all your money and ceasing to be able to trade. So I think when you do some backtesting, you can't just look at, okay, well, how much is this system returning? There are a lot of other variables you need to take into consideration to return something like that. You know, for me personally, I don't feel comfortable trading with a system where I know I'm going to lose all of my capital. Sure, I'd love a 100% return in a year, but for me, I know the comfort level wouldn't be there knowing the potential for losing my money, especially if you started to, like I was saying, we were talking about, on top of that, compounding returns. So those returns get bigger because you're reinvesting your money. If you're trading a system that's doing that and you have 100% drawdown and you're investing all of your capital back, there's going to be some point where you lose it all. To trade a system where you're getting such high returns, really, in my opinion, you need to be pulling some money out of the market. Because when that inevitable drawdown does come, you don't want to lose your entire trading float. Because what happens then? You can't trade. That's it. You don't have the opportunity. And I suppose that leads into the second part, where they were talking about highly leveraged instruments like your options and Forex. Now, 50 or 100%, again, there are systems like that, but you need to then start to look at, okay, well, what sort of drawdown am I going to be getting? So, did you have any other comments on
exactly.
that?
Exactly. No, you said a very good word in your response there, and that was comfort. A lot of people don't consider comfort, and I think comfort is directly linked to risk and tolerance of risk. So, if we're taking on an approach that is highly risky, we're not going to be very comfortable doing it, and that's not what we're after. We need to be something that we're very comfortable implementing. So, if that means it carries with it less risk, because that's just who we are and the way we are and our makeup, then so be it. So, it all comes back to developing that approach which is right for you, not someone else, but right for you. Comfort and risk is a very big part of that.
And it's funny, because when we drop those sort of returns, there's not a person, you know, on this planet who wouldn't say, yeah, I love the idea of getting 100% return, We'd all love that, but we are all different, and you need to understand with that potential for return, there is going to be a potential for risk as well. So
absolutely. Risk and reward need to be in the same sentence at all times almost. You know, when you're talking about potential, profits and everything, you've also got to throw in the risk associated, as you've done.
Yeah. So moving on to the next one here, we've got question five. We've got, I've studied various charts and patterns, but it's still unsure how to identify good entry signal and what technical analysis to use to start with. With a good signal, what is a good signal to see the trend moving in the right direction?
Well, I guess the first thing this person needs to look at is the time frame, and we've mentioned time frame a lot. What sort of time frame they're going to trade. Now, we've spoken a lot of, almost just in the last half hour, about medium-term trends. So if we just stick with that, I'm a firm believer in following the trend, and implied from that is buying things that are going up. I'm a firm believer in buying things that are going up. So if we can identify stocks that are trending up based on the time frame we're trading, and we can do that a number of ways, we can use a moving average, we can analyse peaks and troughs, whatever that may be, if we can identify something trending up, really the getting into it, you know, initiating a trade is really quite easy. And again, it comes back to the simplicity. Don't look for too many things to, you know, confirm with you that it's going up, because often just a study of the price and some peaks and troughs or a moving average will demonstrate and show you that, okay, well, this is moving up and it has been doing so for the last 6 to 8 weeks. This is something I want to get in on. Patterns and you know, really there's nothing too much more that can show you that something is heading up. We may use a pattern or something to fine tune and provide us that trigger, that instantaneous action of, right, let's get in today now because this has happened. That may be a reversal. It may be, you know, passing through the previous peak. It may be breaking through the ascending triangle. Could be anything, as long as it's just that trigger that gets us in. But again, I think simplicity is key. Remember, we are delving here into something that's really not that important, and that's our entry.
Mm.
It's really really that important part of our whole trading approach. That's why I think keeping it simple and just finding a solution and moving on is an important thing.
Yeah, with that, I suppose the other thing that comes to mind as far as, you know, picking your entries and how to best approach that. I've always sort of been, like, again, it sounds like, you know, this person might be looking for that perfect entry. There is no perfect entry. We keep on saying that. I think a good signal, like, there are a whole different variety of them, but the way I approach it is that whole idea there is I'll have an, again, this is something that we cover in the Triple Your Trading Profits seminar. We have like an underlying condition that looks for the overall trend, and then as Stuart mentioned, then on top of that you almost have something that will be your trigger, that moment in time that says, okay, it's time to get in. So that's another one of the components that you do need to have in place. You know, there's different things. There's moving averages and, you know, there's a whole variety of ways to tell whether or not a stock's trending. You're not going to get... when I see someone write, you know, what is a good signal, there are so many different good signals. There's no one performing or best signal, but why not even start basic? Start with something simple. Look at, if you want to look for what's trending, do some sort of moving average crossover of sorts, or, you know, making sure that a shorter term moving average is above a longer term moving average. You know, that's a basic way to tell if something's trending. It's just,
yeah, another basic one. How about a new 60-day high? So, you know, 60 days, roughly 3 months, a bit under. Something that's just achieved a new 3-month high, clearly over the last 3 months has been doing the right thing. You can perhaps combine that, you know, with your moving average to ensure that it just hasn't been going sideways the last 3 months, but it has been trading up. Again, just another very simple entry.
Perfect.
And there's lots of them.
So it's good. I know we're planning for at the Triple U Trading Profits seminar to actually go through and actually point some of these out. So at least people have a guideline, similar to the way we talked about, you know, the band to shoot between for the ATR. You know, I want to really give some people some good, usable sort of rules of thumb, and almost you can't go wrong as long as you shoot between the band. So moving on to the next question here, I suppose this question I get... a little bit passionate about, just because this is the type of question that I get sent almost on a regular basis. So keen to hear your thoughts on this, and then no doubt I'll have my 2 cents afterwards. But someone's written here, "Hi, I'd like to ask if you didn't run another if you didn't have another business to run, would you make a living by trading the market? A good living? Is it really possible? If yes, how long do you think it takes to become one? Do you honestly believe that anybody can be taught how to trade? I mean anybody."
I'll answer the last bit first. I don't think everybody can be taught to trade. I think most people can. But the final step in the final hurdle to be crossed is to have those attributes and those attributes developed to implement a solid process and a plan and a methodology. I don't believe everybody can fit that criterion. So I believe the majority can, but there's just some people that probably will never get it, will never develop the discipline, will never develop certain skills and attributes to be able to implement a very simple trading plan. I think that's just the reality of the world. I don't think you can categorise those people by intelligence or age or anything, or education or anything like that. But there's, I think they said anybody. I don't think anybody can be taught how to trade well.
That's the honest answer. That's the honest answer as well. I love that. So many people you hear will dance around that and say, yeah, anybody can be taught trading, because it's almost like they're out there trying to sell their trading course. But the honest answer is, not everyone can follow a system if they were given one.
I think a lot of people can, the majority can, but there's, to say, yeah, everybody can, that's just not true.
Yeah, the other parts were...
the running the business, wasn't it, at the time?
Yeah,
can people make a living from trading? Absolutely they can, and I know a lot of people and a lot of my clients are doing that right now as we speak. The thing about, probably one of the biggest obstacles, however... firstly, obviously experience and having a track record of doing it over time, and not just for a few months but perhaps over years, obviously the experience is important. A common hurdle, obstacle people have is the money. A lot of people just don't have the money to put aside solely for trading to be able to generate the sort of returns that they need to make a living. Let's say we want to start trading, we've never traded before, but we want to trade for a living, we want this to be our job and we want to make a living from it, and they rock up with $15,000. Well, let's say they need, let's say they want $30,000 to earn a living per year. That means every year they've got to achieve 200% return on their $15,000, and they've never traded before.
And they have to live off that as well.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. So they come in with very unrealistic expectations of trading for a living and what it needs, what they need to, I guess, the foundations to make that a reality. So obviously we need the experience, but I think a lot of times we don't consider we really do need some capital as well. And certainly if we're just trading stocks, and we're saying we're going to achieve 20, 30, 40% a year, but not 100%, but you want $30,000 a year to live, well, all of a sudden that's adding up into some fairly big numbers of capital that you need just as a starting point to trade. So I think that's answers the trading for a living. I know people, it is absolutely a reality, and I do know people personally who are doing this on a regular basis, to answer that part of the question.
Yeah, and I suppose the bit really, when I mentioned at the start, the bit that got me passionate, I might have misread Lamore's question when I first read it, but I get this question almost at least once a week of people saying, they'll send me an email and they'll say, "Hey Dave, if you're such a fantastic trader, why aren't you just trading for a living? Why is that? Why don't you just do that?" And I actually went to the... took the time to sit down and record a full video that explains my reasons behind this, and you can check it out over at my MetaFormula website, which is www.meta-formula.com. But I believe that to be really successful in I suppose life and in wealth creation, you do need to look at multiple wealth creation streams. And I use my business to generate income that then gets shifted over trading for growth. And the type of trading system that I've adopted is more of, like Stuart, that medium to longer term trading system, and I see no benefit from sitting and staring at the screen all day, especially since my trading system is very automated. So what I actually use is my business to generate the capital to invest into that. And I suppose, as Stuart mentioned as well, depending on, everybody's different, depending on the lifestyle that they wish to have, you know, the lifestyle that you need to support, you need to think to yourself, okay, well, how much money do I need coming in on a yearly basis to be able to support the lifestyle that I want to live? Now, you know, I'm not hiding behind anything. I want to live a very full lifestyle. I want to, you know, have my islands and my private jets and all that sort of thing. And I don't think I'm going to get that money that I need for that lifestyle if I just focus it in on trading to build up the capital. I think I can get there quicker by using business and funneling that across, and then also investing it into other areas as well. So I think you can make a full-time living and just do that, and I could now, having built up enough capital to that point, but I have, you know, these high aspirations of what I want to get to, and I think, you know, by building up that capital, and then once it gets to a certain level, I'll be able to get the return that will support that lifestyle, which comes back to that idea of, well, how much money do you have to invest? You can't expect, like Stuart said, to come to the market with $15,000 and expect, you know, to try and make 200-300% return consistently every year on your money, and then just live off that. It's, again, that comes with, if I had to do that, I don't think I'd be able to sleep at night, because I know to trade that type of system, I'd have to be getting taking on a high level of risk, maybe a risk that I'm not necessarily comfortable with. So When people ask me, why do you do business, why don't you just trade? Well, it's part of an overall strategy. So I think you need to get each of these components right, and trading is a critical piece of, you know, a well-structured, well-diversified overall wealth creation strategy. You need to take the time to learn how to do it and do it right, and then you need the capital to be able to grow via trading. Well, that's yeah. The way I approach it.
I'll echo that, if I may, and that is, I believe there's a lot more to life than trading. And a lot of people who trade don't need to sit, and I'm one of them, don't need to sit in front of the screen 6 to 8 hours a day. I couldn't imagine anything worse than just watching prices tick over and, you know, 6 to 8 hours a day and be glued to the screen because I have to. As I said, I think, you know, I'm a firm believer, life's short, you only live once, and there's a lot more to life than just trading. And when I have an approach which doesn't demand all that time of me, you know, there's a lot more time that I have to do other things, and I think you've got to find things you enjoy doing, and as you said, whether that be running business or doing other things, just to sit, you know, to sit in the room and watch TV all day because you can, I reckon I'd have some serious regrets if in 15, 20 years' time I look back and think, all I've done is just watch TV all my life because I was able to trade and make money and trade for a living. I just think there's a lot more to life than that.
Yeah, and that's ultimately why we are trading. We're trading to grow our capital so that you can have the lifestyle that you're really looking at wanting to live. I don't think people, you know, are trading the market so that they can sit in front of the screen for 8 hours a day.
Yeah. No, I don't think so. I hope not.
The next question came through from Shalom, and it was actually a little bit difficult. I think, if Shalom, if you're listening to this, if you wanted to just email me directly on this one, I was having difficulty just interpreting your question, but I definitely want to get the answer that you need. So if you just want to shoot us an email via the support system, we'll definitely be able to help you out with that one. So moving on past that one, the next question I had was question 8. What is the best technical indicator to signal trend reversal?
Okay. I don't know if there is a best indicator or technical indicator to signal a trend reversal. I guess, again, it all comes back to what type of trend, what sort of time frame we're trying to identify a reversal in. If we just stick to short-term trading and we're looking at individual daily bars, I think the best way of identifying a trend reversal in a short-term system is just by looking at the bars and identifying reversal signals, whether it be a hook or a pivot or whatever that may be. And there's a number of different reversal signals we can use for that. I think that's probably the best way and most effective way of identifying a reversal for short term. If you go to more medium or longer term, I don't know if there's really any indicators that can really help, or perhaps, you know, is better than any others at identifying a reversal in that trend. Again, if you're identifying medium term uptrends by analysing peaks and troughs and looking for higher peaks and higher troughs, the easiest way to identify a trend reversal is when you no longer have higher peaks and higher troughs and you've got lower peaks and lower troughs. Clearly, you've changed trend. No indicator is going to give you, you know, advance warning that that's going to happen. Maybe some do, and they might, but they won't do it on a regular basis. But identifying peaks and troughs will do it on a regular basis and tell you exactly when those trends do reverse. So I don't know if there's any, you know, the best, as the person said, the best technical indicator to help you with those things.
I think one thing I liked that you mentioned as well, as far as usually what you'll find is an indicator, if it gives you a very early warning of a particular action, like it's suggesting, oh, look, it's overbought or it's oversold or, you know, a trend reversal imminent, those sort of things, especially the earlier that that indicator tries to forecast and call that particular reaction in the stock, the more false signals it will give. So what you'll find is, you know, oscillators and certain things that are really trying to interpret the price data, because we talked about the way indicators are just interpreting price data. What it is doing effectively is looking at a smaller piece of data on the chart and saying, okay, this is happening, and therefore, based on this super, super mini trend that I'm looking at, maybe one or two bars, and that particular trend is down, so I think it's going to go down. But we know there is a certain level of noise in stocks. Stocks move up, they move down. So those particular indicators will fire off more false signals. So I think when going through you know, you're testing to try and identify which indicator to use to identify a trend reversal, just keep that in the back of your mind that, you know, the more aggressive that particular indicator is, the greater chance that you're going to get false signals.
Yeah, and none of them will come close to being perfect. Not even close.
Agreed. So we've just got, I suppose, we've definitely gone a little bit longer than we'd expected. We've got the two last questions, so we might as well hit those. Question 9 I've got here is, what is a profitability good system to let me know when to enter? Stop loss point, when to exit, and the reasons to do all of the above so that I have a profitable trade. And then question 2, what system are you using and why? So it sounds like the first thing is asking about what a profitable system is, and it's almost, I suppose that's almost like the million-dollar question. When do you enter, when do you exit, and what the stop loss? But what are your thoughts on that, Stu?
Again, time frame is everything. So the style that we're using, if we're trading short-term, we might buy on short-term reversal signals and catch the upswing for the next 3 or 4 or 5 days and buy a leverage product to allow us to make that worth our while. And then our exit is simply a one-day reversal. You know, we come back down one day, we get a lower low. That's our exit. That may just be for a short-term system. Trading more medium-term, again, I believe in following the trend. I want to buy things that are going up. So how we identify that trend is up to you, whether you use moving average or, you know, higher peaks and higher troughs. And so that's the reason to get in, is it's going up, and we just set the stop losses or the exits accordingly. So if we're trading a more medium-term approach, our exits are just going to be that little bit further away, as I've mentioned before. So we might use that ATR multiple, or may use perhaps a 10% stop. So we get in, and our exit's 10% away. 10% is a good rule of thumb. It's easy to calculate. You get in at $1.80, your exit is, you know, 18 cents away. So and then we just, as we mentioned before, we have that method of trailing the price and getting out when the price is well and truly reversed and is now heading back and eating into our profits, because we don't want to give all the profits back. So it's a very general question. The answer is, look, it really depends on the trading style we're developing and the time frame, and there's so many different variables, as we've mentioned. There's no right or wrong way of doing things. There's no right or wrong way of which exit we're going to use. Do you use 10% or the lowest low or the ATR? There's no right or wrong way. They all have their strengths and their weaknesses. So I guess if that person's after a very specific answer, they're not going to get a specific answer because it all depends on the time frame and the risks they're prepared to take and so many other variables.
Yeah, I think in regards to that as well, it might be almost a little bit outside of the scope of just being able to answer it in 1 or 2 minutes, because we'd really need to sit down and work with the person to help them define what it is that they're looking to do, what are their objectives, and then designing a system that can effectively achieve those objectives. And really that's what we're looking at doing for the Triple Your Trading Profits seminar. We're taking the stripping out all the crap that you see on the internet about all these fancy different methods, and we're giving you the rules of thumb, the bands to shoot between for designing a system and making sure that you cross all your T's and dots your I's and basically have a trading system that you can take to the market and trade and at least give yourself a greater chance of success. So I think, yeah, probably a little bit difficult to go into loads amount of detail, but Stuart touched on some few really important points there when designing a system. And the last part that he had, Stu, was part two. I'm curious to know, obviously, without going into exact specifics, because I don't see there's any real benefit for giving someone, your trading system, because then I know what'll happen. I'll sit there and I'll think, oh, this is Stuart's secret trading system, and oh, it's so much better than what I've designed. But it is matched for you. So, but generally speaking, what type of system are you trading currently?
Sure, it is what you just said. But I'll preempt all this by saying that I have I trade two styles, and they're incredibly simple. There's nothing complicated about them. There's nothing revolutionary. There's nothing that no one has ever, not traded before. They're very, very simple approaches. And I've mentioned already a few times, I've almost given it away, where with my medium-term trends, trading stocks, and I do this a lot in my super fund, in my retirement fund, I just buy things that are going up. And over the last 4 years, the way equity markets have performed, it's worked incredibly well, because things that have moved up over that period of time have consistently achieved new highs and gone on the way up. And all you have to do is get in and just set your exits accordingly and ride the trend. And I've had some positions over the last few years that I've held for more than 12 months because I haven't come back down too far, and they've just continued motoring along. So it's a very simple approach to buy things that are going up. How we identify that going up, again, how do we identify the trend? It may be something that's achieved a new 6-month high or 3-month high, 12-month high. If we find stocks that are doing that, we're finding stocks that are going up. And that's one of the time-tested rules of, following the trend. And we draw from that, just buy things that are heading in the right direction. And the exits I mentioned to you, I use ATR for my exits. So, it's a very simple, it really is a simple approach. Again, having the plan is really important, but then following the plan is even more important. So we need all those attributes that we talk about to actually implement that simple approach. Now, for a more short-term approach, trading contracts for different CFDs, again, I almost alluded to a little bit earlier, I actually just trade short-term trends and find individual bar analysis and find short-term reversal signals and trade them accordingly. And again, it's a very simple approach.
Yeah, and I think really the astute listener who wanted to go back and listen to this audio more than a few times could almost piece together, because you really have given away and discussed very candidly different components of your trading system. So I think people should take the time to go back and have a listen and make sure that they've got something in place for each of the different areas that we have covered. For me personally, I like to use... I've always been a fan of sort of that medium to longer term trading as well. It makes sense for me because it frees me up to work on other things as well. I'm not looking to be tied behind a screen. So I used to do some very short-term aggressive trading, but I really have shifted away from from that more so in the last couple of years, I'd say. But my method, I suppose, it's a little bit based on the Nicholas Darvis method, which, if you haven't read the book How I Made $2 Million in the Stock Market, it's definitely worth checking out. And I have mentioned this before. I usually don't like to talk too much about my personal trading method because of that idea that people just want to take that system and trade it without... But trading is so much more. There's that process that you have to go through, and that system needs to match you. And it almost, for a certain extent, I suppose, you know, some people feel like that's a cop-out to a certain extent. But the way trading works, you just, for people who feel that, you're clearly not understanding the process that goes in behind designing a trading system. To be successful, you have to take these steps. If you try and shortcut that, I'm telling you now, you're not laying the right foundations, and you'll probably ultimately end up sabotaging your own success. So, but again, I suppose to answer this question, I do, my system is based on Nicholas Darvis. I do have some tweaks that I've sort of added into it because I wanted to make it mine. That I'm not just going to take someone's system and then trade it. I want to understand how it works. I want to choose what things work for me. For example, I talked about the lowest low. I've taken the Darvis system, and usually the Darvis, he's got this method for drawing the boxes or whatever, and a break below that box ends up, is an exit signal for using the Darvis method. But I've tweaked that to do using the lowest low, which works for me. And I'm basically taking all the fundamentals and the rules of thumb that Stuart's been talking about and written it down, documented it, and that's become my trading system. But it's my trading system. So I suppose that gives a little bit of an idea of the method that I choose. But it sounds similar. Like, Stuart and I, when we chat, we don't... I'm not sitting on the other end of this conversation saying, oh, yeah, Stuart, so what moving average are you going for? Are you going for the 21-day moving average or the 7-day moving average? We don't talk like that. I don't think, even though a lot of people, you know, try and focus in on that, that's not how you design a successful trading system. So I just went off on a little rant there. I suppose... to come back now, Stuart, just moving on to the last question. You still there?
I am,
yeah,
sure.
Fantastic. Just wanted to make sure when I went off on my little rant,
I was listening to your rant. That's all right.
hadn't lost you. I suppose moving into the last question, question 10 that we'll cover. Again, like I said, unfortunately, we got loads and loads of questions. As you can imagine, when you have the opportunity to, ask Stuart or myself questions, people really did seize that opportunity. So sorry if we haven't covered your question in this audio, but that doesn't mean that we're not going to get to cover it in later audio, so make sure you keep listening in. So I suppose question 10, just to finish up, we've got, I have $5,500 in Scotch Trade and I make $200 to $300 on 20 to 30 cent moves. I've been playing penny stocks in the range of $1 to $5 range, buying 1,000 shares. This really is getting me nowhere. I need no help. No, I have no help or guidance. Am I wasting my time? Is stock trading out of my league with this amount of money? And that's come from Tim Roberts in the States.
Yeah, without touching on it, comes across a point that a lot of people ask, and I don't know whether someone sent this question into you, Dave, about how much money do I really need to start with to trade?
Yeah, we have actually.
5,000.
Yeah. What's that? Yeah, we have actually had that question.
Oh, okay. So, you know, people ask about how much money we need to start. Again, I don't think there's a right answer. I don't think there's a set minimum. But I think when you get down to lower numbers, and maybe five and less is touching upon those lower numbers, I think when you get down there, it becomes that little bit more harder to do it, because I think you lose the flexibility with position sizing, and you have to break your money up into perhaps bigger pieces percentage-wise, and that places greater risk on your capital. And of course, we need to do everything we can to look after our capital. So the less money you have, I think the less flexibility you have in being able to split your money across. I think the key word here is patience. I think if we want to make our $5,000 go somewhere, we need to be really, really patient and be prepared for this to take time, for that to grow into perhaps a larger sum of money. And that's going to take time, and I don't mean a few months, I mean maybe a few years. That's why patience is so important with this, and maybe in those 2 or 3 years, we may be in a position where we can afford to lay away a little bit more money to trade. But what you'll also find is, if we do have the patience and see it through, is we'll gain incredible experience in the next 2 or 3 years with trading and buying and selling and making mistakes and maturing as a trader and developing those attributes we need. So it makes it tough with smaller amounts of money. If we start with 10 and beyond, it just makes it that little bit easier in that we have more flexibility and we're able to split our capital a little bit more. I think that's probably what he was alluding to.
Yeah, and I think as well, he talks about, you know, the way he explains it in playing penny stocks makes me feel like he's trading the market, and by trading as opposed to investing, where you're really putting some money in and then you're going for a much longer term trend. When you're trading the market, especially with smaller amounts of capital, obviously, by trading the market, you're getting in and out of a stock on a more regular basis, and your money's going to get chewed up on brokerage. And when you've got such a small trading float, especially like with 5,500, let's say he might, if he splits that up into a couple of different chunks to try and invest in a couple of different penny stocks, obviously, like you said, he's not going to be getting anywhere, because before the before you even get profit, you need to make the money back that you made on the brokerage. So by starting, you're already starting behind the eight ball. So
behind.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, if you were getting started with 5,500, you'd be much better off doing, you know, one of a few things. I suppose you could A, understand the risk involved investing in just one stock and trying to ride out that trend, and understanding that, you know, you've got all these other opportunities that'll be shooting by you, and be a little bit disciplined and just stick with it. And like you said, patience, absolutely key, and just invest and let that money grow. Give it an opportunity to grow. It's the when your money is in the market, that's when it's going to do the growing. And you really need to, you know, just leave it alone and give it a chance. And I think understanding that's one option that you could do. There's that little bit more risk involved there, because you're going to put, for lack of a better word, all of your eggs, or lack of a better metaphor, all of your eggs in one basket. That would be one thing to do. Or the second thing I would suggest is maybe even, you know, spend some of that capital just to make sure, you know, on education, to make sure that you have everything set up, so when you do get that money in place, then you're able to invest it and invest it wisely. That could be another option to go down. But I think to try and trade with $5,000, and by trade I mean hopping in and out on a regular basis, you're really not going to go anywhere, and you would need a little bit more, you know, more somewhere up in the vicinity of, you know, maybe $20,000 or something like that. So yeah, again, no right or wrong answer, and I've had many clients who've started with, you know, next to no money, and sums as little as $5,000, and, you know, leveraged that money by, not leveraged, by the trading sense of the term leverage, but I mean, by leverage, use that money and have had it grow, and then, once it's grown, started to trade. So that's.
And you made a good point about commission, about brokerage. It's easier to lose sight of how much you pay. And, you know, when I do my end of financial year accounts and all that sort of business, then it dawns upon you, oh my heavens, I can't believe I've spent so much on commission over the last 12 months. It just seems like a little bit here and there, but it really, really adds up.
So, got to do your sums and stuff before you get started. So, that pretty much covers at least the first 10 questions that we got. I'm sure if we tried to go through them all now, it'd probably end up being a marathon call. But were there any points that you wanted to, I don't know, finish up on, Stu, or do you feel we covered most of it? Or
No, I think it's been quite productive.
Yeah. I hope people get a lot of value out of this call, and I suggest you do listen to it again. And if you do want to find out a little bit more about the Triple Your Trading Profits seminar that Stuart and I will be running, make sure that you check out Triple Trading Profits. www.thebigprofits.com for all the info in there. And we will be running that. It's going to be run in Australia. So we're based in Melbourne, Australia. So it will be here. That said, though, we've got a few little things planned, and I suggest even if you're not based in Australia, you make sure you keep an eye on that website, because we're probably looking at bringing out some home study course for this as well, because I suppose Stuart and I haven't teamed up for, you know, more than 5 years now, and when we did do our seminars, they were phenomenally successful, and we're looking at doing almost like the last hurrah almost to try and, you know, just get a course that really distills everything that it takes to design profitable trading systems and consistently take money from the market. It's almost like we're looking for the definitive guide. So it's definitely something that if you found this audio of any value, that you definitely want to tune in, because I suppose, not to talk it up at all, but I suppose you haven't seen anything yet. So, again, I'd like to thank Stu for jumping on the line. I feel like we covered stuff. And
good.
Look forward to chatting with you again in the next audio, and hopefully we can answer some more questions. So if you've got your question, make sure that you submit it in, and we'll do our best to get the answers you need.